Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Bob Macko. 3, 2. You know what? No, we're going to keep that. This is how it starts. I'm Matt Cause, and that's Bob Mackowitz. And I just called myself you, Bob. How you doing?
I've called myself you many times.
You lucky bastard.
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like you're at the cottage. I'm here in my mother-in-law's basement. I'm trying to follow the Raptors in the Heat. It's the final 22.7 seconds. I'm watching them on ESPN Gamecast while we chat. Last thing that just happened was Jimmy Butler grabbed a defensive rebound. It's 102-101, full Heat timeout. I'll let you know.
Let me know, because I don't get NBA TV, and if I'm doing like a Skype call, I turn off all other internet things, and I even have my phone turned off just to try to, I don't know if that helps with any sort of internet voodoo, but all I'm trying to do is make sure that we have as clean a connection as we can get.
It's a holiday today, and so we came up to my mother-in-law's for a family lunch, and I noticed right away that the Raptors game was not part of her cable package. Like, she has Sportsnet, but not Sportsnet One.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't really complain, right? Like, people are cooking for you, you know. So I can't.
Say, like, that would be fun.
What the hell's with the cable? You know, I'm thinking about disconnecting my cable altogether, and just buying the various packages. You know, Center Ice and NBA and all that stuff. How much TV have you watched in the last 2 months? Like, not Netflix, but TV.
Ooh, beyond sports and streaming, not really very much at all.
For me, none, zero, zero TV, except for one specific thing, and that's CNN.
Yeah.
So not streaming. Why you kind of foolish?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen a thing. But by the way, CNN, I mean, you got to be careful how much you watch, because it just becomes bad for the soul.
That's true. And I was watching more before at the beginning of COVID, and I would include news network in this as well, like the CTV and the CBC news networks. But you're right. If you consume too much, one, you hear the same message over and over again. Two, it just starts to become so bleak. And I don't want to be one of these people that can't deal with reality, but maybe there's just a certain amount of reality that's healthy for you, after which you just become morbidly fixated on the negative.
Yeah, and also I do wonder, you're going to be served up more negative than positive. And this, even in sports media, we usually focus on which team choked versus which team won. But in news, I think we get a lot more of it. I think sometimes we get a distorted view, and that makes it feel even more bleak.
One of the things is, in sports, it's generally pretty nonpartisan. People always claim that there's a bias for the Leafs or the Yankees or whoever, and that's probably true a little bit. But generally speaking, my experience of sports broadcasters, they're not cheering for teams, and if they are, they tend to bury it. It's a little different in local radio, like the Overdrive guys are cheering for the Leafs. But generally speaking, like, you know, Bob McKenzie doesn't have a favorite team, you know. Now, news, on the other hand, it's divided up so that, you know, whose team are you on, right? So, yeah, it tends to be pretty partisan. Hey, shouldn't we just be talking about the Leafs?
I was hoping to avoid it, but let's get to it. We waited 4 months for it, and the $40 million worth of contracts got 0 points. I thought Matthews looked great. Tavares and Marner were completely invisible. And Nylander was somewhere in between. I'll go with underwhelming.
So where do you want to start? Like, what's the most important takeaway that you got from yesterday's game?
The most important takeaway I took away from last night's game is, where was the Leafs' ability to overwhelm? I knew there was going to be stretches where Columbus's defense was going to be great and shut things down. I just didn't expect that for the entire game, with the exception of two Matthews shots and one Nick Robertson shot.
There wasn't much action. It was an awful game, for one. Like, never mind the fact that the Leafs lost, and that was disappointing. Just as an entertainment spectacle, that was awful. And Part of it was obviously the rust. Part of it was the style of play. Part of it was the fact that there was no crowd. Like, just all of it combined to be just a pretty dismal, shitty experience. I always know how into a game I am by how long it takes me to see what Twitter's up to.
Yeah.
When I'm into it, I generally stay awake because I'm too wrapped up. But I think by the beginning of the second period, I was always starting to drift.
Oh, yeah. You were trolling for snark. You were trolling for the best snark from the game.
So I'm trying not to overreact, even though, like, it's not good for the Leafs. Like, now they got to win three of the next four. But, you know, it's just like it's one game. Columbus played well. It was 0-0 until Freddie lets in a bad goal. He made some good saves, but you're supposed to in the playoffs. Generally speaking, the second line was unbelievably underwhelming. But what I kind of learned from it was, do you want me to go micro or macro?
Start micro.
Okay. What I learned from it was they've got to be prepared to shake things up. And I think in years past, Mike Babcock wouldn't have shaken them up, but I think Sheldon Keefe will. Like, I think you're going to see Marner playing a lot more with Matthews. I think you're going to see CeCe and Riley split up more. So I think there's going to be these micromanagement rosterbation tweaks. That'll be a response to game one, whereas Mike Babcock would simply just roll out the same thing again. So hopefully that works. But at the very least, I think it gives them a better chance to crack, the neutral zone. Jeez, what do you even call it? It's like barbed wire. Like, you just can't go through the neutral zone. It's the DMZ.
I think my problem is, where was the stretch where the Leafs were dominating? Mm-hmm. Like, that didn't happen at all. Like, that didn't happen at all last night. You pay all these guys all that money, you know. You're fully healthy. You've got Morgan Riley fully healthy to help with the offense. Like, everything is there, and you don't challenge. How many moments of that game were you like Corpusello or the hell he says his name, where, like, he was being challenged? Like, it felt like the easiest night to be a Blue Jackets goaltender.
One of the challenges the Leafs, speaking of challenges, that they have is they tend to win with skill. I'm not breaking a story here. But all that offensive talent, like, they don't really do simple things well. And I don't find that they adjust particularly well. They like two-on-ones. They like to, you know, cross-seam passes and this, that, and the other thing. But what doesn't happen is, like, I was texting my buddy. He's a Vancouver Canucks fan who lives in L.A., and he and I were kicking back and forth and watching the game. And we're just talking about how the Leafs couldn't dump and chase even if they wanted to. Like, even if that's what the defense was giving them, they couldn't do it because they just don't have the roster for it. And it was just so disappointing to watch them try the same thing over and over again, to see that Columbus knew what they were going to do, had an answer for it, and that the Leafs just never did anything different. They kept running against the same ball and bouncing back off of it. So let's focus on this for a second. Like, let's talk about matchups, because everybody said before this series started, this is a bad matchup for the Leafs. And so it is.
Yeah.
Are we getting too upset with the team because they just happen to have drawn an opponent that is built to beat their style of hockey? Is it just bad luck?
I go the other way here. Like, you're right. You're absolutely right. But why does it have to be that the Leafs are the ones on the negative here? Why couldn't we turn around and go, Columbus got a bad matchup because the weakness for the Maple Leafs is defense, but Columbus doesn't score anyway. So the Leafs are in a good position because their weakness won't be exposed and they'll have 60 minutes to work on their strength. Like, why is the talking point about just how great Columbus is and how this is a bad matchup or the Leafs have to change? Why is no one talking about what can the Leafs do to dictate their style?
So let me ask you, I mean, cross sports comparisons can be dangerous, but if this was basketball and you had a run and gun team that couldn't execute in the half court, we would be skeptical about their chances in the playoffs because eventually a game does slow down and you've got to be able to execute half court, correct?
Yes.
Even if you're a great 3-point shooting team, like you look at the Rockets who have just been assembled to create space and hit threes and they take record numbers of them. Like, you had to put together a team as good as the Golden State Warriors in 2016 to make that team work. And they have, what, 4 Hall of Famers on the team?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, like, maybe the Leafs have a winning style, but you just have to be so GD good at it in the playoffs. that it's just not realistic in hockey to think that you can outskill the opponent.
So then that goes to the big picture question that I was talking about a lot today. Was last night's game an indictment of the Maple Leafs? It was. How much of it was an indictment of the Maple Leafs, and how much of it was a sad reality that playoff hockey individual talent is devalued because it doesn't have the same value as it does in the regular season?
What was your take on that in the show?
You know what? Here's a boring answer. I don't know. You know, like, I don't want to go 50-50, but, you know, it's another reminder that the individual is so much more important in football, in all the other sports, but in hockey, the individual becomes less important in the playoffs.
So whether it was Patrice Bergeron or Jonathan Toews, but the unicorn has been the two-way center who can dominate the whole 200 feet of the ice, right? And over the last 10 years, we've talked almost obsessively about who's that number one center that's great in all three zones. And of course, hockey, you know, what team doesn't want that? I think what we saw last night, though, was the return of the dominant defenseman. The defenseman who plays a half a game and just has the ability to utterly change the complexion of what's happening on the ice because he is there. That was Seth Jones last night. I felt like it was Seth Jones's night. And as much as we talked about, you know, what was going to happen up front and the forwards and the forecheckers and this and that, his ability to dominate play, it was, you know, if Nathan MacKinnon is who we were all talking about last year, I feel like Seth Jones, if he keeps this up, we'll be talking about him.
Yeah, he's like the same way everyone in the American media was talking about OG Anunoby after Saturday's game. It felt like there was some of that with Seth Jones, but Seth Jones is certainly more well-known in the Canadian media versus OG, the American one. Yeah, the story of the night was the best player on the ice was Seth Jones, and that's not an indictment on Matthews, who did everything he could, but he didn't get a lot of help from Hyman or Nylander.
You know who he reminded me of last night? Not necessarily in terms of how he plays, but in terms of how he could impact a game. Reminded me of teams that...
Can I guess?
Sure.
I thought you'd get one individual. I thought it was Young Zdeno.
No, I wasn't going to say Young Zdeno, but that's close. I was going to say Chris Pronger. Chris Pronger was meaner. I don't know that Seth Jones is as mean as... Well, I know he's not. But
he's just not.
But a big guy who can move. And when you look at it, like Chris Pronger won everywhere he went. Like when you put him on a team, your team changed. And last night, Seth Jones felt like that guy. And going back to sort of is... to loop it back to your question, his ability to be a defensive stopper and to blanket, and Austin Matthews, to his credit, had a good game regardless, but he was never able to really get anything going. I mean, in the end, there was a limit to how much Matthews could get going because Jones was always there. And I think to your point, like playoff hockey, of all four major sports, it's the most boring because it's the one where individual talent gets the most taken away.
Yes.
It's great for team play, and it's close, and it's exciting if you love the game. But just in terms of what's spectacular, it's the stakes as opposed to the individual play that makes it matter to us.
Oh, yeah. And we know, by the way, in basketball, the defense gets better. And a lot of the things that teams do in the regular season, their shooting percentages go down, the scoring goes down. That's the nature of all sports. It's just in hockey, it's the most pronounced.
I kind of think that if the Leafs lose, there'll be a lot of fingers pointed. And, you know, we may be jumping the gun on this, but we're kind of not, because when you lose game one of a 5-game series, you know, the numbers are definitely not in your favor. It's not dire, but it's certainly not good.
No, it's not. Yeah. You got to win on Tuesday. That's the thing. 4 o'clock. I mean, you find me, when was the last time 4 p.m. on a Tuesday was so important for the Toronto sports fan?
Maybe whether or not Babcock was going to sign or Kawhi was going to sign. Like, that's the last time something midday mattered that much.
Yeah, yeah.
And in terms of a game, I can't even think of anything. If they lose, it's going to be kind of unfair how despondent everybody gets because, you know, they haven't played in 5 months. They're playing on shitty ice. They're a skilled team. And they basically got dropped in out of nowhere and said, okay, now play at a high level. I kind of think a team like Columbus must have a natural advantage considering you know, they're all about sort of just effort and play smart as opposed to skill. I think we'll probably want to take a lot of lessons from it. I'm not sure there is going to be really any lessons.
There's going to be lessons, but there's not going to be lessons learned, you know, because the talk is going to be the same. Talk won't change.
Well, you know, I've been chatting a lot. Like you did a show today. What were the three main takeaways you got from your own show today?
The main takeaways was zero moments of the game did the Leafs look like the Leafs. They didn't play like them. They didn't play like their personality. They didn't look like they were having fun out there. I mean, did you recognize Marner or Tavares or Nylander? No. You know, even someone like Mikheyev, I didn't notice that much. You know, that was the first thing. I mean, that was my first takeaway. The second was Seth Jones was the best player on the ice. And the third is I'm not going to give the Leafs credit for playing well defensively. They played against a team that was 27th in goals scored. You know, playing well defensively against them, you know, it's like playing well defensively against the 1992 Cleveland Cavaliers. It's not saying much.
Okay, so let's do this, Maddie. Let's have a little fun with this. Let's divide the next few minutes up into two categories, despair and hope, and make cases for both. Do you want to start with despair or hope?
Let's do hope. You know, Matthews, you know, why not? Matthews looked great.
Yeah, he really did. Give him a lot of credit. And when you even look back to that Boston series last year, certainly as it went on, he got better and better. And this idea that he doesn't show up seems to be less and less true. I know this is supposed to be non-despair, but I kind of feel like Tavares didn't show up. And, you know, the second time they played Boston, like last year, I don't know how great he was that year either. He was better the first time. But
and they need that. And the despair is that second line, because you need that second line to be playing great because you don't have Seth Jones and Zach Werenski on you. And I know the other defense, there's so many good defensemen on Columbus, but at some point you're paying Tavares and Marner like $21 million.
Okay. We're not going to stop. Buddy, I'm going to stop you because you and I, and this is my fault, but you took the bait. We went down despair lane. Let's try to stay positive.
Okay, stay positive. That's your fault. Matthews looked that great, and there's a great, you know, he hit a post. He had another one where Chapa Solo, whatever his name is. What's that?
Corpusalo?
Yeah, Corpusalo, thank you.
I just wanted Solo. For someone else who was Hope Solo, okay.
I did better this morning. You know, if not for a great save by Han Solo and hitting a post, you know, Matthews could have had a couple goals.
And speaking of good goaltending, Freddie looked good. He made one gaffe, but by and large, he played big and he looked comfortable. There was one gaffe. You know, that hurts, but by and large, you know, I don't think anybody is saying that goaltending sunk them. So that's good because he hasn't looked great in the lead up and he looked really good for long stretches last night. So that's something.
Yep. That's hope.
Anything else make you feel hopeful that the team can be better? I guess one of it is the second line couldn't be worse.
There you go. Exactly.
They played them basically to a draw, playing about as bad as they could. I know that's non-scientific, but if they play even a little bit better, they probably win that game.
That's the thing. If the top six players, minus Matthews, if they play at a B level and some of them at a B-plus level, they win that game. And the thing, also of hope, their defense was fine. You know, it wasn't... I mean, Cody Ceci aside, their defense was, you know, for the most part was fine. And it's not like they need to be great. They're not going to be challenged a lot by Columbus.
I'd like to have seen more out of Muzzin and Hall. They were a good pairing throughout the year, and they didn't feel like they really asserted themselves on the game. I'm hopeful that Travis Dermott can continue to play well because I noticed that the pairings, like, they were pretty even in terms of the distribution of ice time. There was only about a minute and a half separating the most from the fewest when it comes to your six defensemen. So they definitely were all getting a lot of run. One of the things I have for hope, and I mentioned this earlier, is I think Sheldon Keefe is willing to make adjustments. Riley Ceci doesn't feel like it works, and I would not be surprised to see a little bit more mix and match go on. Like if they're in the offensive zone, maybe Riley and Barry get thrown out there just to give different looks to create different situational opportunities. I think that Keefe, kind of like Nick Nurse, is not afraid to adjust to the moment. And we used to see this with Mike Babcock and go crazy. Like, you know, last night, if Babcock was coaching, that fourth line would have been about 9-10 minutes, even if they were playing as they were.
Yes.
You know, they would have been on the ice in the last 4 minutes.
Well, it might have helped as the Leafs didn't have a shot in the last six. But, you know, I get your point. You're absolutely right. And the one crazy stat is Matthews played just over 16 minutes in the first two periods. Before that, he had averaged a little over 18 minutes a game in the playoffs under Mike Babcock.
Yeah, so you like the fact that they're ready to lean on those guys a bit more. I would not be at all shocked if they came out and won game two. I would be shocked if they came out and sucked again. You know, they might lose a heartbreaker, but there's no way they're not showing up and there's no way they're not scoring again. So I think just the law of averages suggests that a game as bad as that has to be followed up with something better.
And like, all I really want, even if they lose, can they make Korpisalo work for it? Right. You know, where it's one of those games where he stood on his head and suddenly we're talking about, we're comparing him to late 90s Hasek.
Well, the kid's good.
I know, but I'm saying is then make him look good. He didn't have to look good. If you're going to lose with honor.
I'm with you there. Okay, so do we have any other hope? Or is that it?
It was a one goal game and blah, blah, blah. It can go the other way. And everyone says the Leafs play better when their backs are against the wall. That's usually only for, at least this last year, that's usually for only a game. And then they forget and lose to a Zamboni driver.
They're a team that can go out and blank another team 6-0 and then go out the very, like, two nights later and lose 7-1.
They are.
No.
They're Guy Pearce from Memento. They got no short-term memory.
They don't remember if they're good and they don't remember if they're bad?
Yeah. Someone needs to write on the back of their hand, you know, back check more.
That's so funny. That's awesome, Maddie. Control center of ice. Get to Royal Road. Okay, so let's talk despair. If the Leafs are going to lose this series, what do you think that's going to come down to, the two or three main things that are not going to happen in their favor?
They're going to lose in this series because they're just going to let, the main thing is they're just going to let Columbus play their game and be comfortable. You've got to learn to force the other team to be uncomfortable, and we didn't see that at all on Sunday night.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I know this has been a recurring theme through the whole pod, but I was shocked that there weren't at least moments where Columbus was scrambling. And
never,
even if they're not going to make them comfortable for 60 minutes, they don't have to. They just have to create enough high event hockey that they get Columbus spinning and take advantage. They really not able to do. They didn't look like they knew what the recipe to get Columbus out of its Columbus did exactly what everybody on the planet said they were going to do. And the Leafs looked totally and utterly unprepared. They've known they were going to have this matchup for what now? 3 months?
Yeah.
They looked utterly unprepared. It's like someone took the scouting report and threw it out and no one bothered to write up another one. They looked like they had zero answers for the most predictable thing in the world that was coming their way. Maybe that's just a wrong.
It could be. To me, this goes on John Tavares. He's the adult among those top six, among those top nine. You're the captain of the team. You know, you're a guy who's shown during parts of your career that you're a top three player in the league. Like, he's got to go out there, score a couple goals, assist on one. He's got to make them pay for not putting the top defensive pairing on him. He's got to play so well that suddenly Seth Jones has got to cover Tavares and give Matthews an easier defensive assignment.
Somebody on Leafs Twitter, I can't remember who, it was Dragline Pull or somebody, but somebody threw out the question, make a specific prediction for tomorrow night. And I tweeted out, Marner will have two assists. And the reason I said Marner will have two assists, because I assumed that Tavares would have a goal. and that Marner would probably be part of it. And also that, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets play discipline. So the power play, you know, I was kind of hoping they would get chippy and the Leafs would have power play opportunities, which never really happened. But your point about Tavares is interesting. Like, I kept waiting for him to be quietly impressive, and he was just quietly quiet.
You're right. He was just quiet. And it goes back to an earlier theme. I didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize a lot of the players last night.
Well, the thing is, they kept saying you got to get in close to Korpisalo, and you're not making him, you know, work for it. And if anything, I would trust Tavares to be able to just get down low and use those magic hands of his to make something, you know, like, you know, they always talk about him being able to stick handle in a phone booth. Like, he's got great hands. Like, Columbus effectively kept everything to the sides, which did not help. But, you know, you got to fight your way through. You just got to fight your way through. Marner reminded me of the TV remote control when the batteries are almost done and everything just seems a little off. Like, it's still working, but not really.
Everything's so slower.
Everything's just a little slower and a little off. A couple passes as they were exiting the zone. I'm watching him thinking he missed him by like 4 feet. He just seemed off all night.
So then Sheldon Keefe needs to take the back off and rotate the batteries a little bit and hope that fixes it.
Why does that work?
It does for a little bit, for, you know, a spark, and then it goes back to it. But we're just all too lazy.
Do you know what
to
I want?
Go to the hardware store and pick up our batteries.
Do you know what I want to get, Maddie? And maybe you can help me because you're connected in the sports world. I want to get smelling salts.
Oh, it always looks funny when they use them.
You know, it's every sport has its weird substances. Like in soccer, there's the magic spray that makes everyone come back to life.
Yep.
In baseball, you've got the stuff, the sort of the resin you put under your eyes.
The greenies.
I'm not thinking about amphetamines. No, this isn't like the 86 Mets. I'm more thinking about like that stuff that mysteriously keeps you from going blind when you stare into the sun because there's like tar under your eye.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that works. Someone explained to me, it's like, oh, it absorbs the sunlight. It's like, yeah, but it's under your eyeball. Who cares?
It's like the pink zinc stuff that in the 80s, the snow ski champion would put on his nose and his name would be Chet.
The zinc oxide?
Yeah, the zinc oxide. It was either in a bright pink or a bright yellow.
Zinc oxide and Varnaze.
Oh, yeah.
Did you own Varnaze as a kid?
No, I was never a sunglasses guy. I still don't even own sunglasses. I was never, Varnaze was never my thing.
Yeah, I had a pair of Varnaze, but I was a wannabe. Everybody knew it. Football has that sticky resin that Odell Beckham, you know, enables him to catch things that are behind his head.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what? One of these days, if I was still at TSN, I think I would write an article about mysterious substances and the sports that love them.
And I would love to see the TSN.ca editors try to change your story.
Do they do that? Have you ever written for them? Because you write for CFL.
I'm just kidding. I'm just thinking back more in 2000 when we would sometimes give them content from off the record that, you know, was straddling the line.
You know, Matt, when I think about it, one of the great missed opportunities that we ever had was we used to do something called The Goods On with Matt Cause. And you would go and talk to the guests after the show.
Yep.
And we had Mike Vanderjagt give us his top 10 biggest assholes in the NFL. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember it very well. Very well.
How could you? I thought about this. Like, how did that not become the biggest sensation ever? Like, we had the kicker, a great kicker, too, of the Indianapolis Colts. Just shit talking 10 NFL players.
Oh, yeah.
Who did he pick? No. I don't remember.
I think Chris Carter was there.
Yeah.
He was accusing a couple people of being fake God guys. Like if that was today, is Mike Vanderjagt, you know, why is he picking mostly black guys? It'd become a race thing, it'd be a religion thing. It become a freedom of speech thing. It would become a cancel culture thing. I'm sure that Tomi Lahren girl, whoever woman, would say something like, yeah, it would be very different today. It was 2000. It was a simpler time.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, so back to the lead. Predictions for tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon, as the case may be.
Tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, tomorrow afternoon.
It's from now.
You know what? I have to go with the Leafs winning. I have to believe in this was the team that scored more goals from when Sheldon Keefe took over, and that was with Morgan Rielly missing a lot of time, and that was with no Mikheyev. I have to believe that there is enough talent there that everyone else will play, you know, will put up the same sort of effort that Matthews and that Anderson will be comfortable enough and they get the win.
The inevitable arc of a, like, it's hard to tell the arc of a series when you're in the middle of it because you live with these wild swings up and down. There's no reason to believe that the Leafs just can't pick it up and play a lot better tomorrow. And then you're tied at one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you just move forward. I don't love the fact that Tortorella has last change for games 3 and 4. That could make a difference just in terms of line matching. But in the big picture, that shouldn't make so big a difference that $40 million of all-star forwards can't do their thing. I'm with you. If they lose, even if they lose a close one, I think we'll all be pretty disappointed and deservedly so. I don't know if we should be angry just because of the weirdness of the situation. I think it's fair to be disappointed, though. I think it'd be pretty shabby if Montreal won and the Leafs lost.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. Listen, I'll be angry if they get swept and they have the same sort of offensive presence. The only way I would get upset.
Who do you think's under more pressure right now, the Edmonton Oilers or the Toronto Maple Leafs, both teams having lost their first game?
Oh, I'm going to say Edmonton is because Chicago only had like a 2% chance of making the playoffs versus Columbus, where they were a playoff team when COVID hit, and they had the same amount of points as the Leafs with a lot of injuries as well.
I am 1,000,000% on your side. I think you're totally right. It's got to be Edmonton. If they lose,
yeah,
because both Hub City teams now kind of threw out a stinker in the first game, but I keep thinking to myself, I know Connor McDavid signed there long-term and he chose to be there, but how can a great player like that look around? Like, if they lose this year, he's got to at some point be thinking, get me the hell out of Dodge. And how many kicks at the can they have before a player that great doesn't just turn around to management and say, you just got to get me out of here because this is a mess. I keep thinking about Chris Bosch and how happy Chris Bosch was to finally get the hell out of Toronto.
Yep.
You know, and when you really think about it, can you blame him? The team and the organization were shit. And then he went to the Miami Heat and he won 2 championships and he's in the Hall of Fame. I don't know. I think it would be the best thing for hockey. If Edmonton can't win, then he's got to go. And I got to believe at some point they know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean, they're lucky. He's always pushed back on that, on that narrative. Let me throw out a name to you. Maybe the most weird one.
Okay.
Imagine if I told you the best player in his sport was in a small market for well over 12 years, and the team consistently didn't put enough talent around him, and this player never asked to leave. That would be pretty rare, right?
It would be rare except for football. I think
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I was thinking Aaron Rodgers is the guy, best player in football. Some decent teams, some questionable coaching, but yeah. Football's different, though, because there are no small markets.
Well, I mean, it still is. I mean, you're right. It's not. It's if you're a top quarterback, it doesn't really matter where you play.
It doesn't matter where you are. John Elway was a superstar. He's in Denver. You know, mm-hmm. Denver's not exactly like the media hotspot of the States. You don't have to be
true.
Chicago, New York, L.A., Houston. You don't need to be in a big place to be a superstar.
No, that's true. It's the biggest advantage. Like, it's so much easier to be a GM in football because your star player isn't going to demand to leave because they want to be closer to Hollywood.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen nearly as much. Although I wonder how the future looks with the NBA leading the charge. I don't know. You know, this actually dovetails into something I wanted to kick out your way, but I don't know how much longer hockey stars are going to be expected to endure crappy teams. It's a partnership in a lot of ways. When you're the kind of guy who's pushing 17% of the cap, it's a partnership between you and your organization. You know, you've got a ton of leverage. They've got a ton of leverage. You should be working together. And if your partner is dragging their heels and making bad decisions, you got to dissolve that partnership. If you think of it that way, who could blame a guy like Connor if the Edmonton Oilers fail, saying, I am the best thing by a country mile. You are terrible. This is over.
Bob, have you been reading Jack Eichel's diary?
No, but I bet it's good.
It's got a chapter called F. Pagula.
Yeah.
It's a very large chapter.
It's funny. My Vancouver buddy, just to mention this again, he sent me a note saying, can you imagine Jack Eichel coming out and playing flat if he had a shot at the playoffs? And I had to laugh. He would be like a Wolverine that was in a cage for 3 years and you finally let him out.
Yep.
You know what, mate? I don't know how much of the pregame stuff you watch or if you just watch the game, but you know, I don't like in industry pot shots, but Ron McLean is just driving me crazy. He is talking himself into fits and he's borderline incomprehensible these days.
I missed it. I mean, I never like to judge Twitter because Twitter hates media and Twitter hates every sports broadcaster. So I wasn't able to catch it live.
Was Twitter on his case yesterday?
Well, there's always going to be. There's going to be what you're saying. There's going to be the people that says that Hockey Night in Canada has just become social justice warriors. And then all the other criticisms in between. I do my best to ignore most of it. But yeah, a lot of what you're saying, I heard.
You know, I'm obviously biased, so take this with a grain of salt. But if only Hockey Night in Canada could have had a host, somebody who truly loved the game, but also had a sense of progressive politics and connections to all kinds of communities that he had forged over 20 years, and a history of amplifying voices, and somebody who was comfortable talking about social issues as well as sports issues, if only they could have had a host like that.
Well, I agree with you, Bob. Thank God they got rid of George Strombopoulos.
Unbelievable. Eh? Like in this moment, watching these poor guys, watching these guys flounder to try and figure out how to talk about complicated issues. Yeah. They literally had in the house signed up and working the guy who was perfect for this moment. And they got rid of him because his suits were too tight and he was not obsessed with Viking Alberta.
God, you know, it's such a good point. Like, if George was still at the CBC, he would be the perfect sort of transition point to try to bring in more of this narrative within to mainstream sports.
You know, I'm biased, obviously, but I think anyone who is an objective media follower would at least have to recognize that that guy's skill set is uniquely qualified for a moment like this.
Yeah, I'm biased as well, but if you take it all away, it's there.
You know, and I've been thinking about how hockey players have been really getting judged quite a bit for their inability to rise to this moment and have stuff to say. But, you know, for most of these lives, their lives, like from the time they were 6 years old and started showing talent, they've all been taught never say anything about anything and don't make waves. And then all of a sudden, over the course of one summer, they've all been told have an opinion and lead the revolution.
Oh, yeah. I personally hate. And by the way, this happened in basketball when Becky Hammon and Popovich didn't kneel. I got to tell you, like, just sometimes, and again, everything's on Twitter, and we can never take Twitter too seriously. Twitter is not real life, but just everyone going, why aren't they kneeling? Why aren't they kneeling? And I get the criticism. We all would have liked to have seen more of Matt Dumba's players, you know, do what he was doing and to support him more. But I don't look at the guys not kneeling going, they're horrible human beings.
You know, I think they should have kneeled. But I also think that for a lot of these guys, they have been encouraged to have no opinions their whole lives. And not just encouraged, but punished whenever they do have them. So I kind of feel like if you're looking for statements, don't look to the people who have been told don't make statements.
Yeah. And by the way, I agree with you. I was hoping they would all kneel as well. It's like, I hope they would kneel, but when they didn't, I didn't sit there and start, you know, judging them.
You know, one of the things about hockey is it's become really a rich person's sport. And it costs a lot to become a professional. The best leagues cost a ton of dough. There's a ton of extra coaching that, you know, it's just not realistic to think that you can be a top flight player without getting it. Like, it is a rich person's sport. And when we talk about hockey opening up its boundaries, I would love to see it be a lot more inclusive to people who aren't rich. But, you know, it's a big business, and I don't see how that's going to happen.
It would have to be like some, like, just really philanthropic. I can't say that word.
Philanthropic?
Thank you. To have it happen, because you're right. The reason why the sport isn't inclusive It's just because of the economic barriers. And you would need such a cash infusion. I talk to friends and how much it costs to send their kids to, you know, to play at this level of hockey or this house league. And I know there's some leagues you can do it where it's not for a lot of money, but to become good at it, it's going to take a ton of money and it's going to take a ton of time. And if you got two parents working long jobs, God, that's hard.
You know, the point you make about time is a really good one too. Now, here's the thing. Greatness requires sacrifice. And there's lots of stories of people and families who sacrifice. And that's one of the cool things about draft night is you realize a lot of these kids, like, it's a family story that gets them there. You know, that's not bullshit. You know, it takes a whole family community to get somebody over the hump and into the professional ranks. And it's a victory that should be shared by many. But not everybody is in a position where they can do that. And there's a lot of people who might say, well, that's too bad. You know, like, what do you want me to do about it? But I kind of feel like here's the thing where I balk. You can have that opinion because it's not illegal to have a sport that's only for rich people. It's not illegal. What you don't get to do is you don't get to have the moral high ground and talk about how you're Canada's game. If you create a system that really only benefits the people who can afford to use it, you don't get to stand there with your cup of coffee in your hand and your box of donuts and talk about how you're for everyone, because you're not. You're for the people who can afford you. And I'm okay with that. Like, you know, I don't look at yachting and say, you've let me down. You know, but generally speaking, at the America's Cup, they're not really touting themselves to be America's game, are they? Anyway, I guess it's just interesting. Like, we can't help but have this conversation because every time you turn on sports, it is part of the conversation. I like that it's part of the conversation. But what I hope it isn't is I hope it's not just marketing. You know what I mean? Like, if we don't talk this way, people will blame us.
And yeah. Oh, yeah. They're, what you don't want is the NHL is doing this because they're afraid of Twitter. You know, I and the Leafs said it. And I've seen other hockey players say it. This is a movement, not a moment. And that's what you hope for.
And the only way to be sure is in 2 years' time, have there been advancements? And you got to put your money where your mouth is.
Well, for it to be truly inclusive, it's going to require a huge capital investment, you know, for this to happen. This goes then to, you know, should the government help with subsidies to help children lower income play hockey? I mean, this is a big picture thing because how much should the NHL really be their job to make sure that poor people can get all the equipment and play all the time? You'd love it on an altruistic level, but then you wonder how much of it's their job versus how much of it's about the individual family. Like, it's such a big picture issue in terms of responsibility.
I don't know enough about the economics of this, but I know in a lot of southern markets, the teams have taken it upon themselves to try and grow grassroots hockey because there really isn't any. So whether it's San Jose or the Los Angeles Kings, I think are pretty good about it. And as you start to see players come out of those areas, that's great. I feel like it's different here in Canada. You know, Toronto, the Leafs don't have to invest in grassroots hockey in order for there to be hockey players or a market to draw from. I would love to see them really take the charge. And I don't have the answers for this, and I haven't done like a white paper on it or anything, but I would love for them to open their minds to what they could mean in the community. And all I know is this, Matt. If I watch one more TV commercial about rosy-cheeked kids who just love to do it for the love of the game and the adults that profit from them, I'm going to barf.
Hey, Bob, before we end, I got to ask, did the Raptors win?
They did. They won 107-103. Yeah!
Once again, Bob, the one team we can trust, the Raptors. The one team we have no idea about, the Maple Leafs.
Okay, so I'm watching Vlade Guerrero not go for the ball a couple nights ago.
Yeah. And
I want to love him. I want to love him. But the fact that he came in out of shape, you know, and I mentioned this because of the Raptors, because as lovable as Kyle Lowry has become, the distance Lowry has put between himself and all of the Toronto athletes in terms of who we love the most is getting greater and greater all the time. Who's 100%. Even number two? Who's even number two?
Let's see. Matthews will get some.
Yep.
Hyman. Yeah. Bo Bichette. Siakam.
Yeah, Siakam's a good one. And Bo Bichette, I think you're right about that too. I want to apologize. Earlier in the season, I talked about how Bradley Beal was better than Kyle Lowry. I was wrong.
You were very wrong, Bob. Very wrong.
I was wrong. He's been amazing. God, he's fun to watch. He had a big game today.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, Van Vliet went to the free throw line, double digits. But I mean, hey, listen, the most exciting thing for me was seeing OG Anunoby against LeBron on Saturday. That was incredible.
You know, you and I have had this conversation an infinite number of times that in basketball, you can't win until you have an alpha.
Yeah.
But if there was some team that was going to go 2004 Pistons, it feels like it would be this one.
Yes, absolutely. Where, and the problem is when you, that's the only example we can cite in the last 30 years. There is a blueprint. It's just a very small blueprint.
I can live with losing to Milwaukee. I just don't want to lose to Philly or Boston.
Agreed.
Does that make sense?
Of course it does. Like, because no one likes Embiid, and people don't trust Embiid and Simmons. They think of them as kind of immature, and their coach is a dummy. And in Boston, there's something schmarmy there, and I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Also, I don't want to lose to the Heat. I don't know why. Goran Dragic always bugs me.
He bugs me too. In fact, other than Milwaukee, I don't want to lose to anybody. I could probably not barf if we lost to Indiana. I don't think we would, but I don't hate them.
No, but with so much more talent, that would bother. Like, if we lose to Boston, talent-wise, I can understand. If we lose to Indiana, what the hell?
No, I agree. I'm just saying in terms of teams that I hate, I don't hate Indiana.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, no, true. I don't hate Indiana as well. Yeah, absolutely.
I would be crushed, but I wouldn't feel like I drank a bottle of poison.
Yeah.
I was cheering so hard for the Bucks the other night against the Celtics. I'm sitting on my little exercise ball about 18 inches from the TV screen, and I'm bouncing up and down, and I'm yelling at Chris Middleton to get his ass in gear, and I thought to myself, this can't be healthy.
Bob, I was the same way rooting for Portland against Boston on Sunday. They even took the lead late. Oh, no. Every game, whoever's playing Boston, I'm watching, and I'm cheering for the other team. And you got to be worried about the Celtics. When they got like 60 points on like 40 shots from Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Yeah, you know, Jaylen Brown. I mean, we know Tatum's already there, but Jaylen Brown against the Bucks looked great, and I hated that.
Yeah, I know.
And Gordon Hayward actually looked really good.
They
got a good team.
On paper, they've got talent. They do. They have a good team. And if Kemba Walker's knee is healthy, that would be really scary.
Yeah, he's quick out there. The one thing we have going for him is I think we can beat him up down low. And I love between Gasol, Ibaka, and Siakam, the problems we can cause him in the paint.
Yeah,
but it would be a hell of a matchup. Hopefully, we'll never have to see it because they'll lose in the first round.
And by the way, you're right about the big men. This is me getting nerdy, but Nurkic, I think, had 30 plus points for Portland on that Sunday game.
Yeah, he looked great. Yeah. I watched a chunk of that, too. Portland is kind of my sleeper team. I don't like Hassan Whiteside, but I like a lot of the other players they have.
Bob, I hate to tell you this. Portland is everyone's. Every one of us is rooting for Portland to make the playoffs, either over San Antonio and Memphis, because a healthy Portland team could give the Lakers trouble.
Well, you know, yeah, exactly. You know me, Matt, like with my ridiculousness. I know we're not going to keep Fred, so I've been scouting CJ McCollum. It's not realistic, but do you remember when we were on the air? And I used to do my my Kevin Durant, like 2 years before his free agency, I was doing my Kevin Durant watch on the air.
Yes.
Didn't work.
I remember.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should probably get going, eh?
Oh, yeah. We're close. We're close to an hour. I'm staring out at Lake Muskoka. I'm going to now have a drink after a hard day of slaving over the mic.
What should we do with regards to game two? Should we do a pod afterwards, or do you want to wait till after game three?
Let's see, game two's on Tuesday.
On Tuesday evening, just to wrap?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be at my girlfriend's cottage. You know what? This will be determined. If the Wi-Fi works well enough, we'll do one Tuesday night.
All right, and if not, we'll do one after game three.
Done and done.
All right, Maddie.
All right, Bob, you have a great day. Enjoy your holiday Monday, and we will talk.
Thank you. I'm going upstairs to have some prosciutto and cappuccino.
Enjoy.
Thanks, pal. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.